is fasting, and how do we be patient? How can we be patient? Fasting allows us, helps us to be patient and steadfast. As God says, be patient as the prophets were patient and were steadfast, and do not be hasty, because in this way you can really overcome the enemy. In also in the Quranic verses it says, if you are steadfast you show greatness. Be patient in front of any catastrophe. In this way you'll show yourself heroic, and anyone who is steadfast and heroic will overcome any challenge. My dear brothers, my dear listeners, my dear viewers, this month, of course, this month is not just for those who believe in Islam, but this month is also for those who believe in the message of the prophets, peace be upon them. You who believe, you must of course fast as those who were before you also did fast. In this way you will believe. Now of course I'm going to touch on these religious issues just a little before I go into the latest political developments regionally and internally. Now of course concerning Ramadan, Ramadan, of course, in this month we fast, and this way we can build ourselves. People build themselves, of course. We can also build our character, whether it be from our souls or even our culture, ethics, our thinking. This month is an occasion to re-evaluate, for the human being to re-evaluate himself, to of course look into his soul, look into his culture, his psychology, his ethics, but with God's help. And one of the most important aspects which comes by believing and by worship in this month, one of the most important aspects is the aspect of determination and will. And this of course concerns us, especially here in Lebanon. We in Lebanon must show will and determination, and we're going to speak about this as well tonight, will and determination in face of the challenges in this country. Now my dear brothers and sisters, when God made the human being, it was God's will that the human being achieve his goals and his wishes in this world and in the aftermath by his own doing. A human being achieves his goals by his own doing, by his own struggle. Meaning, the issue is not an issue of this person was born to be in hell and that person was born to be in heaven. No. Or this person was born to live a good life and that person was born to live a bad life. Or that this person was born to be rich and that person was born to be poor. No. This is not the way it is. Any wishes, any hopes, any dreams of a human being, this is legitimate in this life. And also in the aftermath, what the human being wants and looks for in the aftermath, he must get by his own doing, by his own behavior. The behavior in this world leads to results in the aftermath. This is the will of God. And so for this reason, we find that Allah has given the human the capabilities, the abilities which enable him to achieve the goals of this world and the aftermath. Of course, this universe was made, God made this universe, and God also distinguished the human being from all other living things. He gave him a mind, a brain to think, and this is the road. The road, first of all, begins with knowledge. Person, a human being, to know himself, and this is the big problem actually. Many, of course, make mistakes because they don't know themselves. They don't know their capabilities. They don't know their limits. And when a person knows his God, and when a person knows what exists around him, and when a person knows life, and when a person knows other human beings, even human beings and non-human beings, all living things. When a person knows everything around him, and when a person has designated his precise goals, his legitimate goals which he must work to achieve, and when, of course, a person knows the best way whereby he can achieve his aims, his legitimate goals in the world and in the aftermath. In this way, of course, the human will be victorious. This is what a human must know. Everyone, and a human, of course, must know what is good and what is evil. A person must know also what is corrupt and what is not corrupt. A person must also be able to distinguish his friend from his enemy. This knowledge is a very important condition. A person must know this in his behavior. Whatever be the goals or the aims of a person, whatever be the road which a person goes on, he must take all this into consideration. When Allah speaks about the story of Adam, one of the most important morals of the story of Adam is knowledge. And one of this is the enemy. What it is said, the devil is the enemy. Know this enemy. This is what is said. Now, knowledge. So this is it. Knowledge and knowing who are the enemies and who are the friends. And second of all, believing in what you know. It's not enough just to know. But you must believe in what you know. Believe in the information you have. This is the way we build faith, because when, of course, we reach the level of being faithful, then, of course, you can be able to distinguish who are the friends and who are the enemies. Now, most of the time, certain religious figures give an example to make an analogy. They say a person knows that the dead people in the cemeteries, that there are dead people in the cemeteries, and these people are dead, non-living, and the dead people cannot do anything. They cannot benefit or non-benefit because they are buried under the ground, and maybe, of course, remains, just bones. Now, a person in the night, when he wants to go through a cemetery, he knows that these dead people are really dead and cannot do anything. But when a human being actually goes through a cemetery, he is afraid because he has not reached the level of complete faith. So what is required is that our knowledge reaches the level of faith. And third of all, the third condition is the effort. Put effort. Really work very hard. Show commitment. So knowledge, faith, and work and efforts. First of all, in religion, we have the knowledge, and what achieves the goals of the human is his faith, the faith in his goals and what he does, his efforts to achieve these goals. And here I'm speaking just from a religious perspective, I'm speaking in general. Now, but of course, my dear brothers and sisters, what the human needs, any human who has knowledge, any human who has faith, a religious figure who is faithful, what he needs, what this person needs in order to show serious efforts, in order to achieve the goals he wants to achieve, his legitimate goals, what he needs is something very, very decisive, which is will and determination. A faith person who has knowledge without will can do very little. Does not lead a lot of sacrifices. But a person, especially in this world, even those who want to work to achieve goals in this world, not for aftermath goals, but just here in this world, anyone who wants to achieve a certain goal, this world is based upon efforts, working hard, tests, working vigorously. Anyone who wants to get money must be tired, must work hard. Anyone who wants to get education must work hard. Anyone who wants to retrieve his occupied territories must work hard. Everyone who wants to build a just state also must work hard. Anyone who wants to build a family must also work hard and struggle to achieve this goal. Anyone who wants to defend his country, defend the sovereignty of his country, must work hard. So in the personal issues, It's about working hard, working vigorously. And many of these goals which we need to work to achieve need sacrifices, sacrificing with our own bodies, of course staying up late at night, shedding tears, working with our souls, with our bodies, putting up with sacrifices of losing loved ones on some occasions. Whoever does not have determination and will cannot go to the stage of putting efforts and working. Whoever only has knowledge just has theories. We know we have many philosophers, of course, who had certain theories, but they didn't leave a trace on the lives of the people, because all they spoke of was theories. There was no practical efforts made. They didn't have the will and the determination. They didn't have enough will and determination to sacrifice or to really personify any efforts they made. So these are the big issues. And the same goes for religion, when of course God speaks about the prophets. Allah did not distinguish his prophets, this one worshipped more than that one. He did not distinguish the prophets in personal features, who is taller or who is shorter or who is more handsome, for example. He distinguished them by their determination. The determination which stands behind the big goals they did achieve, which stands behind the big sacrifices they made for the sake of their nations and their countries. And today we find millions of people who believe in the message of the prophets. But of course only with sacrifices can they achieve the goals. Sacrifices which need determination. And when Allah spoke to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, he spoke to him about the steadfastness of determination. He distinguished the prophets by their determination. It is known, of course, that those prophets of determination were Noah, Ibrahim, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad, peace be upon them all. And when Allah spoke to us about the story of Adam, he said about Adam, peace be upon him, he said, we didn't find any determination from Adam. So the problem is that determination and will, which should have been shown in Adam, were not at the appropriate level, like the level they were in the other prophets. Now when determination and will are weak, this will of course have an effect on the behavior of the person and on the ummah and on all groups. And here I'd like, after speaking about Ramadan, I'd like to speak about our modern world, speak about certain developments. Today the resistance in Lebanon and the resistance in Palestine and the resistance in Iraq and the resistance in this whole region, this is an expression. When a group or a people fight, they are showing their will and their determination. People who know their way, people who have designated their goal, and people who have the will achieve a lot. The resistance in Lebanon is an example of the achievements of the month of Ramadan. The resistance, of course, showed how we can benefit from steadfastness and prayer. The resistance in Lebanon shows what faith can achieve. The resistance as well could be described in the following manner. The resistance at the beginning designated and identified its enemy very well. It did not make a mistake in identifying the enemy as certain other groups had. And that is very good. One of the, of course, very, very important things is that the person must know, must identify his enemy and differentiate the enemy between the friend. But many other groups make a mistake here. The resistance did not make the mistake, and it identified the enemy. And when I speak about resistance, I'm not speaking about the leadership of resistance. I'm speaking about the resistance with its fighters, its commanders, its martyrs, its injured, its prisoners, the families of the fighters, its supporters, those who support their resistance, those who stand by side by side with resistance. This is what I mean when I say resistance. So first of all, the resistance identified the enemy who occupied the territories and who performed massacres and who killed and imprisoned, who shed the blood of the women and elderly and children, who destroyed the assets, who destroyed the infrastructure, who destroyed the houses, and who is still threatening, and who is still, of course, violating sovereignty. And we do know, my dear brothers and sisters, that whenever the enemy feels that we are weak, this enemy will come back to occupy this territory, these territories, because this enemy still has his eye on our land and on our water. And this resistance has specified its goals, the goals to liberate the human and the territories. The first words which were made by Imam Musa Sadr, may God bring him back to us, was to identify who the enemy, and that the goal is liberation. The resistance said that the way to liberate the human and the land is true resistance, serious resistance, noble resistance, the resistance with all of its forms, on all its levels, especially here the military resistance. This is what I'm talking about. This was the way. But the most important part of the experience of the resistance and its supporters is that in addition to faith and knowledge, the resistance also had the will and the determination. So the first guns were fired with Imam Musa Sadr in the 1970s. These, of course, guns kept firing. They had the will of beginning and the determination of continuing the resistance, and also they had the determination to escalate their fight and to bring about victory. And the result was victory indeed. And this resistance, with God's help, still has this knowledge and still has this faith and still has this determination and will. And so this resistance is still there, alive and working, is still now on the field of challenge, is still achieving its goals, and is still working to achieve all of its goals. My dear brothers and sisters, because those who are listening to us are different men, women, boys and girls, my dear brothers and sisters, yes, we are still right in the midst of the battle. Now, during the last few weeks, we heard a lot of threats from the enemy. The enemy threatened to strike us, to crush us, to destroy Lebanon, to destroy the people of Lebanon, to destroy the state, to destroy the institutions, the infrastructure. They went very far in their threats. But, and you know, of course, how frank I am, but let me just to take this as an example. Just a few days ago, after a lot of silence from the enemy, and specifically Barak was very clear, Ehud Barak, he said what he wanted to do based upon the experiences of the previous war and based upon evaluations of the political and military leadership in Israel and based upon the results which were reached by the Vinograd Committee. Of course, this committee did publish part of its report. It did not make all the report public, but Barak speaks very clearly. He speaks about Israel's alternative, Israel's choice in any stage. They know that their naval capabilities are limited. The Israelis also know that their air force, that their might from the air has been exhausted. All of the technology of the Air Force has been had been exhausted in the previous war, and no victory was achieved. And I even tell you, they weren't even able to achieve any military, make any military achievement by their Air Force. They did destroy bridges, yes, they did destroy land, but they didn't have any military achievement, even with this big Air Force, with military airplanes. But Israel, the right wings, the left wings, the moderates, the extremists, whatever they call them, of course we have no moderates and extremists in Israel, but all of them, the politicians and the military men, say that any new war with Lebanon cannot bring victory to Israel except if it is done by land, a war by land. And so for this reason, Barak spoke about five contingencies, five military contingencies, and that he would fight from house to house and from village to village. Okay, he believes that in this way he's waging a psychological war on us, maybe. And of course, this is his intention, I believe. He's trying to impose fear on the Lebanese, especially the inhabitants of the south. And he's also trying to give some hope to the people of the Zionist entity, these people now who don't have any military leader and any political leader as well. And Barak is also trying to maybe raise the morale of his military and of his people. He's trying to raise the morale by speaking about the possibility of achieving a victory by going to war with Lebanon by land, by using land contingencies. He has many aims, but Barak believed that these continued threats might lead to weakening Lebanon, might lead to a retreat in Lebanon, might lead to knocking on the doors, maybe for mediation. Some people, some countries proposing mediation. Maybe in order to tell the Israelis, please be patient, don't be hasty, and attack. This was Barak's aim, as I say. When I said, just days ago, when I remind you of what I said, and I would like to repeat it, I mean what I say here. These five military contingencies which Barak speaks about, whatever the number of these military contingencies be, he speaks about five military contingencies. But in the previous war, we had about 40 or 50 land soldiers. We had four military groups, four of the most qualified Israeli military groups who took part, land military contingencies took part in the previous war. Now, as I said just days ago, I said that these five military contingencies, inshallah, will be destroyed in our valleys and on our roads, in our inns. They will be destroyed in the Bekaa Valley and in the south and in any place in Lebanon, any place they come to in Lebanon. They will be destroyed, these five military contingencies. Now, normally, now here's the important part. Now, the Israeli media, sometimes they take my speeches live, as some Lebanese channels do or other channels do, but after that the Israeli media discovered that whenever I have a speech, many Israelis listen very hard and this affects them. So they consider that broadcasting my speeches is the kind of a psychological war on Israeli people themselves. So what they did is just to take parts of my speeches and analyze these speeches. But what I said before, now, at the beginning, the Israelis spoke about what I said at the beginning, just in the first maybe bulletin after my previous speech. They, of course, spoke about my speech, and then it was forgotten. The Israeli media didn't make any other mention about it. Yes, they did not, of course, say this. Now, I previously have said that the military contingencies, the Israeli military contingencies, will be destroyed if they come. Now, this was not broadcasted on the Israeli media, but if they, now I'm repeating it, and if they try and omit this or not broadcast it, it can be found on the internet. But let me tell you, why aren't they broadcasting all of my words? Because the people of the enemy, the people in the Zionist entity know how honest the resistance is. They know when we say something, we mean it. Now, I am not the one who makes promises. Let me make this clear. The resistance makes promises. The resistance does what it says it will do. The resistance is honest in its struggle, in its sacrifices. The resistance is honest in its positions, in taking responsibility. What I do, I am just speaking about the essence and the will and determination of the resistance. I am just an official spokesman for the fighters, for those who sacrifice, a spokesman in the name of those families of the fighters, those who have put up with a lot. Because the enemy and because the people of the enemy and because the army of the enemy know the honesty of the resistance when it threats and when it makes a statement, for this reason they omit these words. They did not mention these words to their people. But we must strive to send them this message, not just as part of a psychological war, no, also to defend our country. Sometimes you win the war when you prevent the beginning of a war, when you prevent the war from happening. This is one way to win a war, actually. And we tell the Israelis, yes, we are working day and night. Don't even dream that all this furor in the Lebanese media and that there might be some security deterioration in Lebanon and that some figures who take advantage of a certain situation in order to speak in a certain manner in Lebanon, don't believe that all of this keeps us preoccupied. No, we are always focused on being ready for any campaign. We are always focused on being more capable to defend our country and to defend our people. Don't be mistaken. Whatever happens inside Lebanon, whatever be the events in Lebanon, whatever be the rhetoric between certain political parties inside Lebanon, this does not keep us away from the main issue, which is being ready for Israel, for the enemy. Those commanders, the military commanders, they're always focused on this mission. They don't even listen to what is said inside Lebanon by certain parties. If some people believe that a psychological war can have an effect on the determination and the will and the efforts and the worship of the resistance, they're mistaken. We told the Israelis, we are determined. This is the month of Ramadan. This is the month of being steadfast. This is the month of building determination, the month of building will. In the holy month of Ramadan, this is the month of staying with Allah. This is the month, of course, of strength, of capabilities, of wisdom, of education, of knowledge, and also of mercy and generosity. In this month, we, of course, stay with Allah. We are always in contact with Allah to get strength, to defend our country, to defend our people, and to complete our victory and to prevent any aggressor to do harm to our honor and to our nation. For this reason, my dear brothers and sisters, you have noticed that after that speech I made, after I mentioned these five military contingencies, I did not threat. This was no threat what I said. I just responded to a threat by Barak. Now some European foreign ministers, some in the Lebanese media, said that Lebanon is between an Israeli threat and a Hezbollah threat. No. This is not true, not fair on our behalf. They are the ones who are threatening. On our part, we are being threatened. Our sovereignty is being violated. We are being killed, we in Lebanon. And we tell the whole people, all what we tell them, all what we say is that we defend ourselves and we will defeat our enemy. We will destroy this enemy when this enemy tries to assault us. This is a problem with the world who say that those who threaten, those who defend are equal. Now, after I made that statement, we did not hear any more Israeli threats. We didn't hear any serious threats. No, they went to the other options to put pressure Now, they began to put pressure on the UNIFIL forces, the UN peacekeeping forces south of the Litani River in southern Lebanon. They said that these forces are not taking responsibility, are not spying. Now, let's forget what the situation is in South Lebanon, but they said that the UNIFIL did this and did that and is not doing enough. Just because the head of the UNIFIL in the Security Council, just because he said that Israel is violating Resolution 1701, and just because he said Hezbollah is not violating this resolution, the whole world went upside down and the whole world attacked the commander of UNIFIL. In Lebanon, unfortunately, nobody thanked this general. Nobody even took it into consideration. Why? Why is Hezbollah, is it his duty to always be right? Now, the pressures are focusing, the Israeli pressures are focusing on the UNIFIL and on the Lebanese politicians, the Lebanese political leadership. They're putting pressure on the Lebanese political leadership to limit the readiness of the resistance. They're also putting pressure on the international community, Israel. And they always say that Israel is getting ready. But at least, of course, on the political rhetoric, it's a different issue. Now, concerning the political language by the enemy, it doesn't have any meaning. But what I wanted to say is that we all know this enemy does not have any place, does not, of course, have any place for the weak. Anyone who is weak cannot deal with this enemy. Those who are psychologically defeated cannot deal with this enemy. Only strong groups, only the strong can confront this enemy, those who want to defend their sacredness and their country. When you stand strong against this enemy, whatever be the capabilities of this enemy respects you. And this enemy always takes you into consideration whenever he speaks about you, whenever he speaks to you. This is the truth. My dear brothers and sisters, in the same context, I want to also speak about some of the important points. I'll go through them very quickly. Now, one of the issues in this month which we must speak about, and I want to speak about this because Parliament Speaker Nabih Burri spoke about this as well, the issue of resistance belonging to one group. Now, not many have spoken about this recently, but from time to time some figures speak about this. They still do mention this. Now, the problem is, even when we have done something good, some people don't see any good in you. Whatever good you do, there's just hostility, clear hatred from some groups. Whatever the good you have done, even when we have done something good, they accuse us. Why did you do something good? Now, when people go and resist, they say, you're keeping resistance for yourselves. For example, now, of course, we're fasting. For those who are not fasting, why don't they fast? I'm not preventing anyone from fasting. It's like they're saying, you're keeping fasting for yourselves. You're keeping prayer for yourselves. My dear friends, we're not practicing hegemony on anything, on fasting or on prayer, on anything. Concerning resistance, from the year 2000 to year 2006, resistance did not belong to us only, and we did not prevent anyone from taking part in resistance. On the contrary, there were Lebanese political groups and even Palestinian groups after 1985, even during the 1990s, they took part in the military operations of resistance, either with joint military operations or we facilitated their military operations, but we didn't announce it at that time. But we did not prevent anyone from joining in the resistance. Now, concerning the internal situation in Lebanon, I find it very strange. We have certain political figures, certain political parties in Lebanon. One of them, for example, says they're teaching us about resistance. They're accusing us. They're speaking about resistance and we were the first ones who began resistance. Here I'm speaking about those people. I want to ask them, when did you begin this resistance? Please tell me when. Let me say, our fathers are still, some of them are alive, until from when Israel came to being until now. Our fathers were alive at that time. Tell me, when were you the first ones who began resistance? This is the first point. The second point, there are certain parties speak in the same manner. There are some groups who say, yes, it's correct, we did not take part in resistance, we did not fire any gunshots, but Hezbollah took the resistance for itself. I want to ask those, did I prevent you from taking part in resistance? Some took part in resistance and then stopped. They also say Hezbollah took the resistance for themselves, or Hezbollah and the Amal movement, or some other group X, for example, took resistance in its own hands. This is not true. We do not say that resistance only belongs to us. These are false excuses. This is not the way you convince someone. Let's take the past now. Let's put the past aside. Now, if someone says he's the first one to open fire, that's good. But I want to ask that person, whoever he may be, where are you now? Now, the big question is, where are you now at the end? Where do you stand? With whom do you stand? On which battlefield are you fighting? Okay, now let's go to another subject. In Lebanon today, there is consensus that the Kfar Shuba hills and the Shuba farms are Lebanese. There's a disagreement about the demarcation of the borders with Syria, but there's consensus that the Shuba farms is Lebanese. Whatever be the demarcation of the borders between Syria and Lebanon, Shuba farms is Lebanese. There's part of the Ghajar village which is Lebanese. I'm not telling you no, go and liberate these territories. I'm just making a simple argument. From 2 years until now, Hezbollah has not been in the Shuba farms, is not in the Ghajar village as well. Okay? Hezbollah, whom you say is taking resistance for itself, is not in those areas, is not in the Shuba farms, is not in the Ghajar village. Go ahead, please. Whoever you may be, you're saying Hezbollah prevents you from taking part in resistance. Okay, go ahead and liberate these occupied territories. Lebanese detainees, we solved this issue. All of our detainees have been freed. Go ahead. You have weapons. Now, one of the results of what happened in May in Lebanon, when we had the violence in Lebanon, what was proven at that time is that all Lebanese groups have weapons. Those who always speak time and again about the resistance having weapons, they themselves have weapons. All Lebanese groups have weapons. They also speak about the weapons of legitimacy and the weapons of the army. But those same people who are accusing us, they also have weapons, at least light weapons and mid-range weapons. The events of 7th of May prove that these groups have mid-range weapons, light weapons. Do all Lebanese have mid-range weapons? No, but these groups do have. And during the events of May, even some of these groups show that they had heavy weapons. So you have the weapons. Now, some people might say, give me your weapons, I want to take part in resistance, but you give me the weapons. No, I refuse. You have the weapons, you can buy weapons, you can bring weapons. Bring your weapons, go ahead. This is Lebanese occupied territories and the Shuba farms and the Ghajar village, and liberate the territories. Am I preventing you? No. So let's put this aside, the issue of resistance belonging to one group. And in Ramadan, I want to say that Hezbollah in the past, present and future never kept resistance for itself. Resistance is a project, is something for everyone. Everyone can take part in resistance. Yes, now people, when they speak about resistance belonging to one group, when they speak about taking part in resistance, they don't mean they actually take part in military fighting and sending their sons to the fighting. They mean to take part in resistance by saying, make the decisions, as if they're the generals and we are the soldiers. Our people, our youngsters must bring the sacrifices, must make sacrifices, and they are the ones who make the planning. This is what they meant previously when they said that one group kept the resistance for itself. They say that we made the decisions of war and peace, that we made this. Just not long ago, a Hezbollah MP, Muhammad Raad, said something which is true, but there are just some people who just must criticize whatever we say. The Hezbollah MP said that the Lebanese government doesn't have the decision of war and peace. What does he mean? He says nobody in Lebanon makes a decision of war and peace, not the government, nor the army, nor the resistance, nor the people. Those who have the decision, make the decision of war and peace, is Israel. Israel makes the decisions of going to war or having peace. The Lebanese army doesn't make this decision, nor does the resistance. The Palestinians, look at what they're going through in Palestine. Israel is the one who makes these decisions. America is the one who makes these decisions. The Lebanese government, the Lebanese resistance, the Lebanese army, they don't make these decisions. But in spite of this, some people still had to criticize. So we call on everyone to take responsibility. This is what I said on the 26th of May. We, if you go back to what we said in 1982, from 1982 until now, we always said that resistance is the way to reinvigorate the Lebanese, to reinvigorate the Ummah, the nation, so that we could have a nation of resistance, a people of resistance. Now, whoever wants to sacrifice with us or who wants to sacrifice in our place, we welcome this. But really, it makes us angry when we criticize whatever the good we do. Now, another issue concerning the national dialogue, the Lebanese president spoke about the necessity of going to dialogue as soon as possible. Yes, we welcome this. We want to discuss the strategy of defense. We want to find out, do some Lebanese groups really want to defend Lebanon? Now, there are some people who are mistaken in a certain issue. They say that the Shabba Farms is an excuse for us to hold on to our weapons. No. Even if the Shabba Farms is liberated, we will hold on to our weapons because we're speaking about resistance as a necessity to defend Lebanon. I spoke about the strategy of liberation and strategy of defense. I was very clear. But there are some who are still confused. They're confused on purpose, deliberately. We are a country, we in this country, we are under threats. Israel threatens us. How do we defend our country? Let's discuss this on a table of national dialogue. Now, if anyone wants to weaken Lebanon, wants to go to table of dialogue to weaken Lebanon, they won't achieve anything. But if anyone wants to come to the table of dialogue to discuss how Lebanon can be strong and defend any military campaign against Lebanon, this will achieve concrete results. So we have to look at how we will approach the table of dialogue. The second issue which I want to speak about in these last few minutes is the issue of the helicopter of the Lebanese army, this helicopter which was shot down in southern Lebanon. Now, in the same manner, unfortunately, this accident did occur. Now, I'll speak about the details in moments, but the Lebanese army command, now let's be fair, you know that we always strive to be fair. The Lebanese army command, the Lebanese army intelligence, in general, the Lebanese army commanders, the defense minister, the Lebanese president, the prime minister of Lebanon as well, they were very responsible. They showed responsibility in this issue. You see, I'm not differentiating, I'm not distinguishing between March 8, March 14, as you can see. Whenever somebody shows responsibility, we confess they show responsibility. They behaved with responsibility. They said this accident occurred. Let's wait for the investigation. Now, the written statement by the Lebanese army was very precise. A Lebanese army helicopter was shot down, which led to the martyrdom of the pilot, military army pilot, Samir Hanna. They did not speak about, of course, speak preemptively. They did not criticize or accuse anyone. On the contrary, the Lebanese army in this statement showed great responsibility when they pointed out to unknown assailants who were behind this accident. Maybe at the beginning minutes, they didn't even know what the details were. So the army in its statement showed responsibility. Now we, at the very beginning, we knew what happened and we cooperated with the Lebanese army command because the helicopter was not shot down, actually. It wasn't shot down. The helicopter was flying over these hills and it was landing, we haven't known that up till now. Of course, we have to wait for the investigation, but it was either in the process of landing or it had landed. Some of our brothers were surprised with this helicopter, where did it come from, and so it was shot at. So the army had to come. There was another person actually in that helicopter. The army had to come and evacuate, take those people, the crew of the helicopter. We, of course, cooperated with the investigation. We asked who made the decision to open fire on this helicopter. If there was no decision made, this person who opened fire, why did he open fire in the first place? Of course, this person is a resistance fighter, I want to tell you this, and an honorable person who opened fire. Anyway, the accident occurred. Now you'll see, even this term, what I said, I just said an honorable resistance fighter, they're going to focus on this. Wait and see tomorrow. They'll speak about this and criticize this tomorrow in the newspapers. Certain politicians will speak about this. So this was a mistake, an accident, a painful mistake. In Iraq, this happens between allies. This happens all the time. Accidents happen. In the same army, these accidents happen. In the resistance, of course, just a few days ago in the media, I read that some Hezbollah has some Martis who are killed in an unknown way. When we have training camps, yes, some of the fighters are killed in training, are martyred in training. It's not our duty to tell the media where they were martyred. We tell their parents, their family, yes, but we don't tell the media. So mistakes do happen, accidents do happen. So we cooperated with the investigation. That resistance fighter who opened fire, he was the one himself who came. He said that this accident seems to have made some problems for the resistance. This resistance fighter is actually a youngster. He's 19 or 20 years old. He said, I joined the resistance to defend my country, not to give problems for the resistance. He said, I'm ready. He said, tell the Lebanese army, I want to surrender myself. I'll turn myself in. In order to prevent anyone from creating problems or a confrontation between the army and the resistance. We don't, of course, pick out our people from the streets. All our resistance fighters are faithful, of course, are vigilant, and do show the will. And, of course, this person knows when he goes to the military tribunal, anything can happen. But this youngster, this 19, 20-year-old person, He turned himself in. He said, I want to turn himself in. He said, I joined the resistance to defend the country. I didn't join the resistance to live a great life. And if this accident has caused problems, I turn myself in. We don't make someone turn himself in against his will. He was the one who proposed. So we turned this person, this resistance fighter, in. We said that there is a tribunal. And they said, we want to hear the statements of witnesses from the resistance who were at the venue, the place where the accident occurred. So these people were in an area of valleys and mountains. There were Israeli threats, and in some moment an accident occurred. The whole issue just took moments, seconds. One of our brothers, in an involuntary manner, actually, very quickly, of course, just open fire in this situation. Now, during the cabinet meeting, they spoke about this issue with responsibility. Some ministers, of course, wanted to actually exaggerate this issue. The president, the prime minister, the former army chief, the current army chief, the defense ministry, they all showed responsibility in this. Of course, they're continuing to show responsibility until we achieve results in the investigation. Of course, we always stress on the necessity of a good relation between the resistance and the army. I want to remind those who are trying to create divisions, trying to create a conflict between the army and the resistance. In September, of course, previously, fire was opened. There was fire opened on us. In 1996, the Lebanese army opened fire on us. September 1996, the Lebanese army opened fire on us, and some of our supporters were killed. At that time, I was described as being, not brave, not showing courage. Why didn't we respond to the Lebanese army? But we did not respond to the Lebanese army. Why? Because we are very cautious not to go into any confrontation with the Lebanese army. Remember what happened in Maram Khail, for example, when all of the Shia showed responsibility after 7 Shiites were killed, actually. They were killed in a very, very suspicious manner, and we left this for investigation. We did not respond. What I'm saying is this was an accident. What happened in this army helicopter was an accident. So nobody expect to take advantage of this accident to bring about a confrontation between the army and the resistance. But how did certain groups, how did they behave? How did they react? They reacted in an irresponsible manner. You know, I am the one who always calls for being calm, showing calm rhetoric. Be patient and forgive. But let me shed light on this. Now, there was some analysis which we heard. This was a deliberate act. Hezbollah deliberately has drawn red lines for the Lebanese state. They also spoke about two states, the Hezbollah state, the Lebanese state, the targeting of the Lebanese army deliberately. There was one article I read, why the martyr Samir Hanna. This is what they said. Those, our brothers, of course, on the field, did they have knowledge that Samir Hanna himself was in the helicopter and killed him deliberately? Of course, they didn't know this. But what is said by certain political groups is that they did know, and they, of course, targeted this Lebanese army pilot on purpose. This is unacceptable. How can we speak in this way? How can anyone who cares for the army speak in this manner? What are you trying to do? You're trying to create a problem, to create a confrontation between the Lebanese army and the resistance? Is this how you show national responsibility? Okay, you don't like the resistance, but what about the army? What are you telling the family of this Lebanese martyr from the Lebanese army? They speak about this in the media that the family of this martyr refuse our condolences, but here I send my condolences. Now on this occasion I send my condolences to the family of this Lebanese army pilot. Me and my brothers and the resistance, we know the real meaning of martyrs, of our brothers being killed, of our loved ones being killed, our loved ones who are martyrs. Just like certain people, certain fighters are killed in training, just as Lebanese army soldiers are killed in training, this accident occurred as well. I send my condolences to you. Of course, we share your sorrows. I understand what you're going through. But other than that, it's our duty to go and visit this family, and when this is possible, we will do this. We will go and visit this family. This is our duty. Now, when they speak about this, they speak about this accident in this way, and on the other hand they speak about going to the table of dialogue. How can we go to a table of dialogue when such conspiracies are being made, when such accusations are being made? And then we hear some who say, no, not just those who open fire, we want to see that person who made the order to open fire. If nobody made the order, gave orders to open fire, and if anybody did give the orders, I take responsibility. I'm not just a spokesman for the resistance in such ceremonies. I take responsibility in war and peace. I take responsibility for whatever action this resistance takes. Now, so I just wanted to touch upon this event, the event of the Lebanese Army helicopter. This does not help making such accusations. The whole thing was an accident which has no political side effects, which has no political significance. It is no message to Israel, because the Israelis know us very, very well, and the Israelis don't need messages, and we don't give messages by killing our fellow countrymen, whether they be in the resistance or in the Lebanese army. This is no resistance to anyone inside Lebanon. The whole thing was just an accident. And here I must comment on what was said by President Michel Suleiman when he spoke about this accident. What he said was correct, totally correct. There is an investigation. But when the media exaggerates this issue, when I'm speaking about the media, I'm not speaking only about Lebanese media, I'm also speaking about Arab media, which is even worse than some Lebanese media outlets. Some Arab media outlets which are lying and which are inventing things which have no truth. They even, of course, accuse us of committing things which others have committed. They commit us of doing things which we have nothing to do with. The whole thing was, what they said was, Hezbollah shot down a helicopter. No, this is not correct. But they just have a hostile attitude towards the resistance. So in general, let's just rip Hezbollah apart. Let's skin Hezbollah. Hezbollah cannot be skinned. And nobody now or in the future can skin the resistance or destroy or rip the resistance apart. The resistance, Hezbollah, was born, and between the eyebrows you can see the word, the eyebrows of Hezbollah, you can see the word victory. And for the future will show you this. The future is coming. The days will come and you shall see. And so I just wanted to clarify this issue about the army helicopter. And I even heard one person saying that accusing this person who opened fire as being a criminal. I don't accept this. This person is not a criminal. He was doing his duty, an accident happened. The investigation reaches results, not you. You don't make the results. You don't say this person is a criminal or not. This is the way we are responsible, and we show responsibility concerning this issue of the Lebanese army. Let everybody show responsibility. And if anyone believes that by taking advantage of this accident they can reach certain results, they're mistaken. As long as we have responsible leadership in the Lebanese military, and as long as we have a responsible Lebanese political leadership, Lebanon will always be okay, and nobody will be able to take advantage of this issue and reach concrete results which could lead to divisions. And I also want to touch upon certain other issues. Of course, concerning the army helicopter, we don't want to speak about our version of the story. Let the investigation proceed. Well, I just wanted to speak about the background of that event, of that accident. Now, the last point which I want to conclude with, it's part of what I wanted to speak about in a press conference. Now, you know, we made a big achievement in the Lebanese detainees issue, and today I can announce officially this is what I intended to do in the press conference, but I take the occasion now. I want to announce that according to our knowledge of live prisoners, live Lebanese prisoners in Israel, there are no more live Lebanese prisoners in Israeli prisons. We have the issue of Yahya Scaf. Now, we received four remains of bodies, not four bodies, four remains, because these four people were martyred a long time ago, including the martyr Dalal Mughrabi. And we received documents which prove that between these four remains, we have the remains of Dalal Mughrabi and Yahya Scaf. But because this condition of these remains are very difficult, the DNA test did not reach an appropriate result. So the process will take a long time. We sent these remains outside Lebanon to take advantage of the most advanced technology in DNA to conclude this process. Now, I don't want to speak preemptively before the DNA tests are made concerning the remains of Yahya Scaf. The DNA tests won't affect the issue of the martyrdom of Dalal Mughrabi. She's a martyr, that's decided. Now, what we must, with the excuse that you haven't completed the gathering of the information, the duty of a Lebanese judiciary is to behave justly. And justice means giving these people a tribunal as soon as possible and freeing those who haven't been proven guilty. This is not just my position, this is also not about politics, it's not about anything which is related to Lebanese politics. This is about ethics, it's about culture and religion and about humanity. I'm not speaking about just Lebanese who are in prisons, even of course the families of the Lebanese soldiers who fell martyrs. They want the rights of their sons, those. Even the family of Samad Hanna, the Lebanese pilot who was killed, they want justice. All they want is justice. They don't want people to be imprisoned with no clear crime, with no clear accusation of what crime they have committed. So we want justice to be achieved. I hope that Ramadan will be a chance to achieve justice and to resort to ourselves once again, look into ourselves. And assalamu alaikum, and may God accept your fasting. And thank you very much.
One, that was Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah in Lebanon there, speaking in the capital of Beirut. Just a quick recap of some of the points that he made, speaking in Ramadan, telling people what has to be done to build the characters, among other things. He also said that the resistance, which is a product of fasting and the things that are done during the holy month of Ramadan, has been able to identify the enemy, obviously referring to Israel. He said that the resistance has been able to identify the real enemy of the Lebanese nation. He said that the enemy, again, Israel, is waiting for a weak point or a weak moment in Lebanon to be able to reoccupy the whole country. He also reminded the Israelis and everybody of the humiliating defeat that Israel suffered in the 33-day war back in 2006 in southern Lebanon against Hezbollah there. He also said that Israel will be defeated in the event of any other war against Lebanon. Talking about the prisoners in Israel, Lebanese prisoners, he said that there are no more alive Lebanese prisoners that are held in Israeli jails. If you recall, recently there was a prisoner exchange where Samir Kuntar, the longest-serving Palestinian, of course, prisoner, was handed over by the Israelis to the resistance in Lebanon. Many issues he talked about. We'll be talking about that in the next hours as well. Right now, I guess we're going to go and catch the rest of Four Corners, the host, Shihab Sawat. Stay tuned.
Agreed.